seeing extraordinary quarterbacking, or are we just seeing your offense being run in a competent manner?
No, it's always about the individual, so it doesn't matter what plays are called or scheme is run. You know, they still have to be executed, and I think he is executing them, and that all the credit goes to him. He spends a lot of time. He works extremely hard at it. He's got a really good grasp of what we're doing, and extremely accurate in his throws. And again, doing great job in just making decisions and not putting the ball in harm's way. You know, sometimes you look at some passes. Some guys, you know, they go through the defender's hands and it's not an interception. But you're like, whoa, if he caught that, you know, we had two of those last week against Green Bay. If we just caught the ball, you know, that's two more interceptions for us. But very rarely do you see those situations come up in a game. And I think he's a really, really good decision maker, and it's exciting to see him grow here.
You've always with him, said, whether it's a pump fake on a screen to the other way, or a look off of a hit. Is he as good? Has he always been? Even when you saw him against Arizona, or has he really refined that part of his game?
I didn't study him when he was at Arizona. I was just usually pissed off when we were playing him because he was making plays. But I wasn't. You don't really get a chance to watch him, the intricacies of what he's doing. You know, what are they throwing here? And it's a three-step concept, five-step concept. How quick is he getting the ball out of his hands? Can we rush this protection? That's kind of our thought process when you're going against him. You're not thinking about when you're playing against him, hey, someday I'm going to coach him, because he had already transferred. It wasn't like he was transferring again. So,
well, how about when you first had him in training?
It's like everybody. I think first they learn how you call a play, and then all of a sudden once they got that down, now they, where is everybody? Now you got that down. Now how do we continue to refine it, and now I got my footwork down, so I'm not thinking about it. I'm just reacting, and I'm going from one to two to three. Now, if I want to go to one, maybe I can make them stay on two longer, instead of you going through your progression, is force them in the way you want to go through progression. So I think he's doing a really good job as we continue to grow as a group, where he's continuing to, really the little things are starting to come out, and that's what I think he's trying to see in his game.
But you've always said that he could thrive in your offense, he could run your offense. What is it about the scheme that makes it conducive to someone, disparate quarterbacks like Michael and Nick?
I think it's all about, there's flexibility within what we do in terms of, it's always based on personnel, and I've had different style quarterbacks in my career, and so I think anybody that's any smart at what they're doing is going to cater their offense to what they do. And, I think the best example in this league is John Fox. When he had Tim Tebow, he ran one offense, and they did a hell of a job, and they went to the playoffs. And then he had Peyton Manning, and the offense changed. He didn't ask Peyton Manning to do what Tim Tebow was doing, but he also didn't ask Tim Tebow to do what Peyton Manning did. I think, when you got a group of players, and this is what you got now, let's assess how do we put them in positions where they can make plays, and then get out of the way and let them go play. And that's kind of what I've always been that way. If you got a guy who's more of a runner, and I had some of those guys in my career at Oregon, then we feature more quarterback runs. You got someone who's a little bit more of a thrower, then you feature more throws. If you got a guy who can do both, then I think that puts a little bit more stress on the defense. But it always has to be catered to who's pulling the trigger.
You said the offense is generally, when Nick was in there, you said it's generally the same. Are you just saying
it is?
But I think when
Nick takes off, it's not 60 yards, but it's six. And in critical situations, he can still do that. So that's the point I was trying to stress from there, that we're not calling, it's not an entirely different package. But I think in everybody, there's subtleties in there that Nick may like this throw better than Mike likes that throw. But overall, we're still running four verticals. We're still running double post concepts. We're still running a quick game. We're still running our screens. So I think that part's similar.
Last night, Nick said that he is basically learning how to run and that he's having a lot of fun doing it. How has his decision-making been from your standpoint about when to run, when not to run?
I think it's been good. He's missed a few, and he'll admit that. But I think a lot of that's through repetition. You got to really get a feel for how to do it. And a lot of that is also how much do we want to put him in those situations where, if we hand it off and we can get three, then, yeah, we'll live with that. We're good with second and seven. I think it's an experience factor. You get a little bit more comfortable, a little bit better feel of it. You get an understanding of what you can do and what you can't do. So,
the last three games, you guys have done a really good job of limiting opponents' field position to start drives. And that's a product, I guess, of taking care of the ball and punt coverage and kick coverage and so forth. How important, when you rank things, obviously giving the other guy a longer field and shorter field of support, but in terms of Bill Davis having some flexibility for what he has to dial up you know, when the other guy's got a ways to go. And in this last three games, the importance of that field position game.
Yeah, it's huge, and I think the biggest factor that factors into that is, number one, don't turn the ball over offensively, so obviously you give them a lot shorter field. If we don't convert offensively and we're in a situation where we have to punt, then can we pin them deeper? You know, the play by Boykin and pinning the ball inside the five, the unbelievable punt by Donnie in the fourth quarter there, that's huge. And obviously statistics will tell you, you know, the longer the field is to drive, the better chance of success is for the offense. You know, the shorter the field, the better it is for the other way. You know, so I think what we have to do is continue to understand the field position battle. And it takes all phases. It takes the offense not turning the ball over, churning out a couple first downs so we can move the ball out of harm's way. And then if we do have to kick and turn it over, you know, how good is the punt? Where does it go from a directional standpoint? How good's our coverage unit in terms of keeping them pinned down in there? And then when our defense takes the field, it is obviously a little bit easier for a coordinator when you go out and you're defending 90 as opposed to defending 9. So, you know, I think it's really how a team comes together as a group, and it's the offense, it's the defense, and it's the special teams.
Are you someone who believes in momentum, and how do you continue the way you're playing after a prolonged absence?
Do I believe in momentum?
Do you believe, from 1 week to the next?
Yeah.
You do. So
if we win the next week.
So now you have this disruption in the schedule. Mm-hmm. How do you continue the way you've been playing?
Well, I think this bye occurred exactly when the NFL planned it, because we knew about this when the schedule came out. So we've had a schedule in place knowing that we're going to play 11 games and then we're going to get a break. So everybody in the league has a bye in their thing, so we don't really worry about it. And I think when you start to think about, God, we're really playing well, I wish we didn't have a bye. It's things that we don't control, we don't worry about. So we knew it was coming up. We knew exactly how we were going to handle it. We've had the same schedule in place since we put it together in June. So, you know, so be it. But I think when you come out after a bye and you don't play well, if you blame it on, well, we were on a roll and then we had to take a break, then you're just giving yourself built-in excuses, and that's not what this deal is all about. We don't make excuses. We knew the schedule when we came out. We knew we were going to start the season and play, you know, three games in 11 days, and that's the way it is, and that's the way we roll with it and move on. So I don't really think of it from that standpoint.
You had Mike Vick listed as a question going into the game. How close was he to playing, and do you think
I think Mike probably could have played if we needed him on Sunday, but we weren't going to keep three quarterbacks active.
So he'd be ready, you
know? We're hoping when we come back off the bye that, you know, obviously with this week off, when we get back to next week, that Mike will be up and ready to go. But we'll see. I know he's progressing. So
did the late bye affect the way you prepared for this season? I mean, would it have been any different if you had the bye in week 4, week 5?
Not really. I mean, in terms of how we practice on a daily basis, no. In terms of what we did, you know, I guess to answer your question, if the bye was earlier, we may practice a little bit more this week. I know with it being in week 11, you know, I think the biggest thing for us right now is just for all of us to get a break, you know. And so those guys are here today just watching film, and they're doing some weight work. And then tomorrow we'll get out in the field and run around for the last time, and then they'll be off. So, you know, maybe if this occurred week 2, week 3, or sometimes when it's that early bye, I still think there's a lot of football to be practiced at that point in time. So I think that part is a little bit different.
What makes this as good a shape? I mean,
guys I talked to yesterday, older guys that, you know, have not experienced a bye this late this season, feel remarkably good, and they credit a lot of it to your approach to the whole sports science thing. But I mean, are you surprised that these, except for the injuries you've had, that they feel as good as they do at this point?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, that's part of the plan, and it's a well thought out research plan. It's not just a, hey, let's try this, you know. So but it's a two-way street in terms of they have to buy into it too, and they've done an unbelievable job of buying into it, because we're not with them 24/7, and nor should we be with them 24/7, but we got a bunch of guys that want to be great at what they do, and they understand that not only what they do here during the day, but what they do when they're not here during the day has a great effect on you in terms of your being able to respond physically on Sundays. And I think they've bought into that, and I think that's a credit to those guys.
What's been the key to the red zone defense? Has been very good most of the year.
We obviously, in the last couple of weeks, created a lot of turnovers down there, so I think that's huge. You know, obviously the number one thing is you want to stop, but not only are we getting stops, but we're getting turnovers created down there, and that's been – you know, that's kind of like the icing on the cake. But I think it's, you know, the field obviously gets shorter and there's not as much room for them to operate. And I think our guys have a pretty good understanding of the plan that's going in. I also think our guys, now that we have a body of work to kind of study film, we got an idea of what people are trying to do down there. And I think our coaches put together a plan and our players are executing it.
Do you think people have said it's a bend but don't break defense? Give up a lot of yards but not a lot of points. Is that kind of a fair classification?
I don't care what they say. You can call it whatever you want.
Are you okay with?
I'm okay with whatever. I'm okay as late. This game's been about, do you score on offense and do you not let them score on defense? And it's always been that. You know, I said it before, and I'm not being facetious. We don't play fantasy football. We play real football. And it's at the end of the day, do you have more points and did you not give up points? And that's what this game's always been about. And, you know, the statistical part, I think, you know, you're chewing on things that I don't think you need to be chewing on. You need to stop people from getting the ball in the end zone. And I think we're getting better at that. We can still do a better job of it, and I think we all know that. But and it's the same thing with us when we get down there. You know, we had a field goal down there again. We need to convert. We need to score touchdowns down there. So.
What did Fletcher Cox need to do to get to where he was in the first few weeks of the season to kind of the level he's playing at right now?
I don't know what he needed to do. I just think what you're seeing out of Fletcher is that we're just watching him grow. You know, I still think you forget he's still a really, really young player. You know, everybody on our D-line is a young player. So I think he's getting acclimated. For him, it was a, you know, he's got a change in systems, a change in coaches, and really starting to grasp and figure out what we're trying to ask him to do. But I think his performance, you know, what he did on Sunday was outstanding. You know, he was a disruptive force in every way, shape, and form. Had an interception, you know, had tackles running around everywhere. And I think he's starting to feel more comfortable in what we're asking him to do. I think our coaches understand better. It's putting him in better positions just because they understand him better. I think we're just all getting a lot more familiar with each other. But I thought his performance on Sunday was outstanding.
With the way Nick's playing, is it just ridiculous to even ask about who the starting quarterback is going forward?
After the
quarterback, he's going to start for the bye week. So just so you guys want to know who the starting quarterback is, Nick will be the starter for the bye week.
After the quarterback competition.
They got a Benny question here.
You're playing in the line. Along the same lines with Fletcher, Benny, I mean, as soon as you guys started, he had talked about in the beginning of the year how it was tough for him to come off the bench and find the rhythm of the game, but it seems like now he's, you know, you guys are starting him and he's right off the bat involved.
Yeah, but I just think it's, Benny was new to everything, so whether he was coming off the bench or starting the first play of the game, you know, it's all the same. Once you get out there, you start to get into a rhythm, so he's starting to feel more comfortable out there, and you can see it in his play. You know, he's starting to, you know, all of a sudden plays that he was a step away from a couple weeks ago, he's now there. You know, and I saw him, you know, kind of come down the line a couple times and make a big play on the back, and that's really what we're starting to see with all those guys. And it's just, I think everybody's growing as a group, as coaches, and it's encouraging as you head into this bye, you know, to be kind of on an upward momentum, not on a downward swing. So but I don't think it's because he wasn't starting. I just think it's he's getting more snaps overall too. So
after the quarterback competition this summer, you talked to both of the guys and let them know which direction you were going in. Is that something that you'll do again?
Whenever we get two healthy guys that we need to talk to. So
would there ever be? I mean, let's try a different tactic. Okay. Would there ever be? Would it even be necessary to even name someone? Because
no. When they're both healthy, I'm going to sit down with both of them when they're both healthy.
In college, it seemed most of your bye weeks were followed by Thursday night games, so you didn't have these 2 weeks. But what was your approach then in bye weeks and in bowl games when you had some type of matches?
Well, bowl weeks are definitely different because we played in 4 BCS games, and we all occurred in January. So, you know, I think we had somewhere between 31 and 37 days off, so that's an entirely different animal in its own right. And when we had bye weeks in college, it was more, we used it as improvement weeks. You know, we usually, you know, our guys aren't hightailing out of there and flying across the country and going home and doing all those other things. We gave them the weekend off, but we usually, I think, practice 2 or 3 days during that week, you know, a Tuesday and Thursday, and they were off Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then come back the following Monday to start, so.
Chip, you brought in assistant coaches from a lot of different places, obviously a handful from Eugene, but how have you seen the whole thing kind of come together as the staff, the position coaches, the coordinators, and you, and a lot of guys who didn't know each other, hadn't worked together, and how much, I mean, how difficult is it to get that kind of group working together like this?
I think it's difficult if you make it difficult, you know, and one of the things that was very important to me was making sure we had the right fit. And from the right fit, it was from a personality standpoint. I thought it was really important to get a diverse group. I think if you get too many people from the same pool. You all think alike and all act alike, and that may not be the right way. You know, I think it's important to hear from different voices and different people and how people did it differently. But then you also have to have a bunch of guys that can put their egos aside and say, now that we have all these ideas on the table, we all have to kind of come to a conclusion of what's the best one and how are we going to do it. And that's hard, because when you're interviewing guys at this level, I mean, everybody has a background, everybody has a resume, everybody's coached at a lot of different places and is certainly more than qualified. But the biggest thing for me was making sure, and it's not a really a tangible thing, of were they the right fit. And I think that's kind of, I don't know if it goes unnoticed, but it's been a real big plus for us, I think, because the players learn from the coaching staff. And if there's, you know, if your coaching staff's got a bunch of egos on it and they're all acting in different ways, then how can you not expect your players to act the same way? Because they're going to emulate the people that are teaching them. So I think the biggest thing for us was to get a bunch of guys that really didn't have egos, that were very, very intelligent, that were great communicators, and then let's, hey, as a group, collectively, let's figure out a way to get this thing done. And so far, it's been great. We got a bunch of guys that I think they've all made the next person, the person next to them, better. And I think when you can say that every single day, that guy next to me, you know, you don't always have to be the smartest guy in the room, because there's a lot of smart guys in that room. But also to be able to have the ego to say that, hey, that's a good idea, I'm going to listen to it. And at the end of the day, who cares whose idea it is? It's our idea when we walk out of this room. And I think we got a bunch of guys that do that. And I think that's what makes kind of working here a lot of fun every single day.
You mentioned that you don't require them to be here ridiculously late at night, you know, breaking down film. What's your philosophy behind that? Not overworking these guys.
My philosophy is, you have a job, do it. You know, if I have to watch what time you get in the morning and watch what time you go home at night, then I hired the wrong person. You know, and I think you have to empower the people that work for you. I think you have to empower them to do what they were selected to do. And if someone watching over you and making sure they know what time you get in here in the morning and making sure they know what time you left here at night, then I don't think that's what. You know, we're in professional football. If you got to worry about that, then, you know, I've never asked that. And I never did it when I was in college. You know, get your work done. And you got a bunch of guys that love it. You know, you got more guys that you got to tell them to go home than you do to say, hey, be around here. So, you know, if you wake up at 3:55 in the morning, you want to come into work, come into work. You know, but I never have encountered that. I had an unbelievable staff at Oregon that was special, and I've been fortunate here that it's the same exact way. And I got a bunch of guys that just love football, love working, and we get along really well. So,
was your first year in the NFL, taking over a 4-win team, you know, being first year in the NFL, did you expect more growing pains than you've had, or did you have fewer growing pains than you
thought? I didn't have any preconceived expectations. You know, a lot of it was, you know, every day was kind of like, oh, that was interesting. Didn't know that was going to happen. You know, just kind of take it as it comes. You know, we don't have a set. We have to get to this or get to that. It's do we see improvement? Are we getting better? Do we continually make the same mistakes? You know, things like that I think are for me what you can see from a growth standpoint of, you know, and that's what I don't see. I see our guys, if we make a mistake, we correct it, and then we get better and we improve. And I think that's the mark of an organization that's going in the right direction, you know. And I think that's the positive things that we gain out of. But I didn't have any preconceived notions or numbers or anything like that they were this before, they were that. It was a clean slate with everybody coming in here. Let's move forward as a group and see how we can improve every day.
What's the coaching staff schedule going to be? Self-scouting?
Yeah, we got a lot of work to do. You know, we're here through Wednesday, and then they got Thursday and Friday off and Saturday and Sunday. But I'd imagine some guys will still be around Thursday and Friday. But we're done formally meeting on Wednesday.
Yesterday you said you guys are going to be playing meaningful games in December. Was there a time, like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, you guys just lost those 2 home games, you know, to Dallas and the Giants? And did you think that was possible, that, you know, these games?
Yeah, we always thought it was possible. But it doesn't matter unless you do it, so. But it wasn't. There was never a point this time where we were like, we're not going to play meaningful games in December. It was, you know, and the only reason I'm talking about playing meaningful games in December is our next game is in December. So, and I'm always talking about the next game. So we play December 1st, and it's a pretty meaningful game. So,
Chip. Pico Alonso is also really good start at Buffalo. Yeah. What did you expect from him? And you had to manage him through some tough situations. What was that experience like? And, you know, do you take extra pride in a guy who's doing that well?
No, I take extra pride in that I had an opportunity to coach Kiko. He's awesome. You know, and I think everything that people are seeing in Buffalo is what I've always known about him all along, is that extremely dedicated, driven person, both academically and athletically. He was a great student, too, over a 3.0 student. You know, he made a couple missteps early in his career and really changed. And I think he understood that the opportunities that he has in front of him and everything that's happening to him now, I don't know if it surprises other people. It doesn't surprise me. Kiko's a special player, and I think when you watch him on film, you know, it's Kiko see ball, Kiko tackle ball, and we saw that at Oregon a lot, and I think people in Buffalo are seeing that right now.
Just following up on an earlier question, when you were at Oregon, the offense seemed to go with multiple quarterbacks in there, and then, you know, with Michael, the offense had success, and with Nick, it's had success. So do you consider this system a quarterback-friendly system? Is that a fair way to depict it?
Depends on what game you're asking about.
Generally speaking,
I would say 9 times this year, yes. 2 times this year, no.
Nick Foles, I mean, obviously what you said about, you know, this isn't fantasy football, but the numbers that he's put up.
I was talking about the yardage point.
But especially in terms of, like, passer rating, how do you interpret that? Because that's some pretty elite company that he's in. He's leading the league right now. He's on record pace.
Big thing for me with our quarterbacks is – wins number one, and then interceptions number two, and he's been really good at both of those. So you know, some of those were attempts, all that other stuff, because a lot of times a quarterback, the attempts and all that are dependent on who's calling the plays. You know, he can't throw it where you're not calling it, you know. I think part of that, but when you have a guy who's consistently not putting the ball up for the other team and serving it up, you know, we're plus 10 in the 6 games we won, and I think we're minus 6 or -7 or -8 in the games we lost, and that's a direct correlation. There's a direct correlation between the turnover game, and that's the biggest thing for me. So I don't really look at the anything that gets over 100, excuse me. I don't know how you can get like a 132 is better than a, you know, I know the higher the number is the better, but the biggest thing for us is obviously are we winning, and we've won with Nick, and then he's not turning the ball over, and that's huge for us. What's that?
Across the board, where is this team going?
I'm not being facetious, but across the board, everywhere. I mean, that's the thing, and I think our guys understand that too. I think we left a lot of points on the board the other day. We need to do a better job finishing off the game. We finished off the game in the Tampa Bay game, finished off the game in the Green Bay game, did not finish off the game yesterday. You know, 4-minute offense, which we thought was good the week before, was not very good this past week. We need to do a better job. In terms of overall finishing people off, you know, when we have leads and making sure that even if we do go for it on 4th-and-1 and don't convert in that situation, that when our defense goes on the field, it's not a one-play score. You know, we make them drive the field and kind of work the clock from that standpoint. So we have a whole lot, coaches, players, everybody, that we need to continue to work on. So we're ways away, but we're in a position where we're ways away where we can continue to get better, that hopefully it'll pay off for us.
4th-and-1 play was an example of you being aggressive. Do you feel like you got your foot to the pedal when you're up big like that? Or is that kind of, you know, what you're used to at Oregon when you had to do that?
No, I didn't think number one, we were on the 38-yard line, so we weren't going to kick a field goal in that situation. And I just felt at the time if we could get another first down there, that, you know, that would have been huge for us. You know, I think we had just come off, you know, we had a 13-play drive for a touchdown in the third quarter. So, you know, we had proven we consistently could move the football. And we were just a half a yard short on the pass play to LeSean. Thought we could go with it real quick and get, you know, try to get one in there. I'll give him credit. Fletcher made a great play and standing Bryce up in the hole, made a tackle, and, you know, we didn't convert. But I think part of that, you know, we got to convert offensively, but we also can't let them go one play and score a touchdown defensively. I think it's a combination of the both. But when I'm making decisions like that, a lot of it's dependent on how our defense is playing too, because I'm not afraid to put our defense on the field in that situation.
What about putting guys and teams away? Is that just something that's just going to take time?
Well, if we had got the first down, we may have put them away. So yeah. I know we're trying to do it, you know, but we're not there yet. That's the point about what do we need to improve on. We need to when we have an opportunity to put people away, we got to put them away, and we didn't do that.
Chip Ian said before the season that he thought that the biggest adjustment for a college coach coming to the NFL is the length of the season. But at this point right now, where you've played 11, 12 games, at the college level you're done except for the bowl game, whereas in this league, the hard part's just starting. How do you feel right now? Did you have to take a different approach for a longer season mentally?
emotionally?
No. I mean, I understand what Coach is saying, and there's point to it, but my schedule the day the season was over was a lot worse than my schedule here because, you know, you're planes, trains, and automobiles recruiting from Sunday night till Friday afternoon and hustling back and practicing, you know, getting to practice in Friday afternoon, practice Saturday, practice Sunday, get back on a plane and fly all around the country chasing down recruits. So it wasn't, I think maybe a misconception is when you're a college coach in the last game is done and then the bowl game comes, you don't have a month off. I would argue my schedule was more hectic from a recruiting standpoint than it was here, you know. So I'm looking forward to being in the office every day and watching tape. That's a fun part of our job.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Happy birthday.